The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Morning. It is time to get up with a fantastic fight to the finish in Phoenix. If you didn't stay up late, you need to see how this one ended. Then, Rodgers' most reliable teammate stands by his QB, but only to a point. We'll explain what really happened yesterday in Green Bay. And then, oh, this was hideous. They dropped the pants and almost dropped the gloves in baseball. We'll show you why these guys were so angry as we get up with you, starting right now. Delighted you've chosen to get up with us on a Wednesday. I'm Greeny in New York. We're jam-packed. The full football squad is ready to go. But if you missed the way last night finished in Phoenix, we need to begin there. Game 2, Western Conference Finals. Game of the night. Devin Booker against the Clippers. What a finish. Pick it up 40 seconds left in the game. Suns up by one. Paul George in transition. Playoff P. Taking it strong. Clippers a one-point lead. Half a minute to go. Next, Suns possession. Booker didn't have a huge offensive night, but he does knock this one down. Two of his 20. Clutch shot. Needed stitches after colliding with Pat Beverly earlier in the game. Next, Clippers possession. They're down by one. It's George working on Jay Crowder. He's got it to go. Paul George had 26. Clippers back in front on the other end. Booker's going to have it knocked away by Beverly. Ball goes out of bounds. It's called Phoenix ball. But the refs would take another look, which was something we said a lot of times last night. Clippers get the ball. Suns would foul George. One-point game. He missed the first. Oh, and then he misses the second. He misses both shots. So it's still a one-point game. Suns with a chance to win. 8 seconds to go. Bridges in the corner. It's knocked out of bounds. It's off Terrence Mann. So the Suns get one more chance. 0.9 remaining. They call it up. Jay Crowder throws the pass. The screen is set. And oh my goodness, he did it. DeAndre Ayton, the slam dunk as time expires. Among the most incredible finishes in the history of any NBA playoff game. Suns get all the way back and they win it 104-103. They've got a 2-0 lead in the West Conference Finals.
Well, I'll start off by saying that's definitely Jay's game winner. Making a great pass or a 7-footer. Other than that, Coach drew up a great play where, I was in the best position. My teammates trust me and my coaches trust me. And, Book set a great screen, that freed me up into the lane to at least gather my feet and go for the ball. And the rest is, just off my athleticism and my talent,
There's really no other reason to describe it. We got PJ and Timmy Legler with us here. PJ, you're a coach. I want to start with the offensive piece of it. Take us through it. Take us through what made that play so spectacular.
Well, all three guys involved executed perfectly. Jay Crowder, DeAndre Ayton was right. Jay Crowder did the toughest part. There's no question about that. But if you watch the screen, Devin Booker had to do what he did or you're not going to get him open. He sets a real solid screen right there. Touch illegal, maybe, but you're not going to get that call at the end of the game. Now Crowder's got to deliver. Look at how close he is to the backboard. And then DeAndre goes up, and he does do the easy part, but the pass was perfect. Legs made a great point last night. DeMarcus Cousins didn't contest that lob to the rim. I think what happened was he got in late. Sometimes that happens. You put your team back out, and all of a sudden one of the assistants yells out, hey, let's put a big guy on the ball. And I think that's what happened. DeMarcus came running in late, and his angle, his back is kind of to half court. His back needed to be toward the middle of the court, kind of toward the foul line, if you will. And then it would have made the pass a little more difficult. The way that pass was thrown, would he have stopped it? No, but he wouldn't have given Jay Crowder the clean look he had at that rim. You love the execution. You love Monty with the guts to do that. Don't forget, 0.9 seconds, they could have brought a shooter around to knock down a jump shot. So it didn't have to be a lob necessarily.
And you were correct, by the way. Hembo and I went back and looked at it. DeMarcus Cousins literally pulled off the sweats and ran out just for that play. So they did just put him in the game in that spot. Meanwhile, Tim Legler, that's the beginning of where I wanted to go with you. For every action, there's an equal opposite reaction. It's a great play by the Suns, but how about the way it was defended?
Yeah, and look, it starts obviously with DeMarcus Cousins. And in that situation, you know, and you learn this really at a very young age. You think about any time there's a baseline out of bounds play. And I've been in that situation many times in my life where you're guarding the ball and you're just taught, make sure that ball cannot be directly thrown to the rim or into the paint. It has to be funneled out to the corner or to the three-point line. And yes, PJ's right. There's enough time to catch and shoot that. But obviously, your percentages go significantly down if you're talking about a 25-footer in that situation as opposed to anything at the rim. And DeMarcus just gave him a clear sight line right where he needed to throw the basketball. You know, one thing I wanted to point out, think about how it's a game of inches. The shot by Bridges that set all this up, if that ball doesn't hit the rim and literally carom directly, sharply in that direction where it's deflected out of bounds of 0.9, this game's over. If that ball hits the rim and goes up in the air at all, there's not any time left, no matter who gets the rebound. So that's unfortunate for the Clippers. Bad luck there that it left them 0.9, and then they just didn't execute. And Batum couldn't bump on that either because he's guarding Booker, and he's terrified of Booker popping out for the shot. So it was Zubac doing the best he can. And the last element of this, he actually did pretty good job. It's just DeAndre Ayton's elevator goes to one more floor than Zubac's. That's what it comes down to because he's right there. But Ayton is just a little longer, a little bit more athletic. And obviously Zubac got that bump from Booker that prevented him from really being able to gather to go up.
All right, so PJ, the Phoenix Suns have now won 9 straight games, and they've won these 2 without Chris Paul, who they do expect to get back for game 3. Are they now, in your mind, the team to beat for the championship?
Well, they're the team to beat in the West. No, I don't think they're the team to beat for the championship. I still like Milwaukee coming out of the East, but I mean, they're playing unbelievably well. I can't imagine Lou after the game. He should have started his post game to his guys with, hey guys, can't we split, get a split in these first 2 one of these times just to make it a little easier? Devin Booker is playing out of his mind. Patrick Beverley did a great job. If you told me they would slow down Devin Booker as much as they did, you would think it would have been a great opportunity for the Clippers, but he stepped up big when it mattered. You know, a lot of people didn't realize, Greeny, that, you know, everybody's screaming offensive interference. That's a pass from out of bounds, so it's a different set of rules. Like, you can catch it and throw it down. A lot of people were all chirping, like, he can't do that, he can't grab it. It's a pass. It's a different situation than a shot.
It's an important point to make. Legs, let me come back to you then on the other side of this. The Clippers, to PJ's point, they were down 2-0 in each of their previous series, and they managed to come back to win. They're going to have to do it, we think, without Kawhi Leonard, although he has not been ruled out completely. Can they do it again here against this red-hot Phoenix team?
Yeah, not only are they red-hot, they're obviously getting their leader back. So they haven't even been a complete team, and they've got 2 wins in this series. And now you get the brains of the operation back on the floor, the guy that can manage the game, the guy that can score and take over a game if that's what the situation requires as well. So this is a different team right now. Not only are they hot, they're confident. This is one of the teams that I've seen in a long time with the best role definition. Everybody on this team knows exactly what they're on the floor to do. They accept that. They seem like they've got great chemistry. They're incredibly confident, and they're connected to their head coach. And most importantly, they've got 2 different guys that they have faith in to take over a game in any situation. So I just think this hole is a little bit different than the 2-0 holes they were facing in the first 2 rounds. I don't see how they're winning 4 out of 5 against this team the way they're playing right now.
Not without Kawhi, for sure.
Yeah, and we'll see. Again, he has not been ruled out yet for game 3 or for any of the future games of this series, but I don't think there's a lot of optimism that he's coming back. We'll have to wait and see. Both of you guys are definitely coming back as this morning continues, so sit tight. Thank you, fellas. But we got to get to the next big story of the day, and it involves that man again because we have a development on the standoff between Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. This week, one of Rodgers' closest teammates, Devontae Adams, spoke to Fox News about Rodgers' absence and how the team is handling it, and here is what he said. He said, "I'll be there," speaking of training camp, "and I'll be ready to rock. Hopefully Aaron will be there as well, and if he's not, we're going to get going. Like I said in the press recently, I back him and I support him, whatever he does. It's just kind of how we get down. We've always had each other's back since I first got here. Like I said, praying that he comes back, but if not, I'll be there and I'll be working." So any idea that these guys were going to hold out of training camp the way many of them missed the mandatory mini camp goes by the wayside. And so Dan Graziano, Ryan Clark, and Mike Tannenbaum get up with us here early this morning. Danny Graz, you were telling me this morning that that comment from Devontae is sort of a microcosm of the way the entire situation is.
It is. And those guys didn't miss the mandatory minicamp. They missed voluntary OTAs.
Right.
So ever since it's been mandatory, Devontae Adams and the other receivers have, in fact, shown up. And I think when they didn't show up for OTAs, there was a sense of like, oh, look, they're going to force the Packers' hand. They're going to give Aaron what he wants, whether that's a new deal or whether that's a trade. And I think at this point, you're listening to Devontae Adams articulate the position that the organization has articulated all along. Not going to trade him. If he wants to show up, we'd love to have him back. If he doesn't want to show up, we've still got to get ready for the season. These games are going to happen whether we have Aaron Rodgers or not. We can't just shut things down for 2021 because he doesn't show up. So I think that's the Packers' state of mind. They'd still like to have him back. They still plan to do some reaching out and try and figure out how to fix the situation. But if he doesn't come back, that's his decision, and they've got to get ready for the season regardless.
So, Ryan Clark, and I haven't had a chance to talk to you in a while, and it does start to feel like this momentum is building up on the other side from Rodgers here. The Packers, they clearly don't have to do anything. The other players are going to show up. Mm-hmm. They're going to try and put together a season. It's really going to be up to him whether he's willing to just continue this game of chicken. You know him a little bit. What do you think he'll do?
Yeah. I believe that he will. But I also believe that none of us can actually predict what Aaron Rodgers is going to do, because this is so personal. It's almost so petty. It's all about his feelings. And I think that's what Devontae Adams is feeling. If you listen to Devontae Adams, you know what he is? He's in the fifth step of grief, and that's acceptance. He's just accepted that, you know what? This may be an Aaron Rodgers-less type year. This may be a year where I have to go out and do it with Jordan Love, who's a second-year quarterback, who's mostly the reason why Aaron Rodgers won't be here. But I think that the Green Bay Packers understand this. Now Devontae Adams understands this. And this is very on par with what they said during the minicamp, that they want him back, but they understand he got to make his own decisions.
That's exactly right. Look, I agree with you, RC. I don't think he does come back. And so, Mike T, you were telling me that if you were running the Packers, that you would have heard Devontae Adams' comments and they would have made you concerned. Why?
Yeah, to use RC's word, there's a lot of grief going on because it's an honest, sober look into what the 2021 season could be, which is a minimum six-game differential from Aaron Rodgers to anybody else that's playing quarterback. And if I'm Matt LaFleur and my best players are actually talking about playing without Aaron Rodgers, it becomes that much more real if I'm the Packer organization.
Look, I think there's only one thing that everyone can agree upon. No one wins if a guy who was the MVP of the league, who was the best player in the sport last year, doesn't play the following season. But if Ryan is right, and I think he is, I believe that is the direction this thing is heading. We will see. We'll take a quick break here. We're jam-packed this morning. As busy a day as we've had in a while. Coming up, is there a new Tom Brady, or are we just seeing a side of the GOAT that didn't come out in New England? We will get to that, and we will, of course, get back to the Valley. What went wrong on the final play for the Clips? Can they dig out of another 2-0 hole? We're answering all your questions as we get up with you on ESPN. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Get Up is brought to you by Popeye's Chicken Sandwich. Now, if you didn't stay up late last night for Game 2 of the Western Conference Finals, here's your wake-up call.
There's 9/10 remaining. Crowder will inbound. Cousins waving his arms. Crowder looking, throws it. Alley. Oh! Aiden puts it down! He puts it down! It's over! Suns win Game 2!
Mike Breen with your wake-up call. DeAndre Ayton's dunk means the Clippers fall into a love two hole for the third straight series. Now, as obviously they dug out of it each of the previous two times, no team in a single playoffs has ever done that three times. The one silver lining, their coach Ty Lue has recovered from 0-2 deficits four times in his career, the most of any in league history. Much, much more on that fantastic finish as we continue. Meanwhile, on Planet Earth, it's brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Tom Brady with some trash talk ahead of his golf match with Phil Mickelson against Aaron Rodgers and Bryson DeChambeau. Listen.
Bryson, this is for you. Aaron, this one's for you. Phil, it's gonna be us all day. Get used to seeing this. Let's go.
Tom Brady, when you put that together with his comments we talked about yesterday from HBO's The Shop, in which he was talking about being a free agent, and he said one of the teams they weren't interested at the very end, and I was thinking, you're sticking with that person? I never know how to clean that word up, but one way or another, let me bring it out to the group here. And Ryan Clark, I will start with you. That's a guy you competed against for a very long time. It's not a guy most of the rest of us know from press conferences and other appearances here. What do you think of all this trash talk from Tom Brady?
This is not the guy that I knew. This is not the dude that I played. See, that dude played in New England, and for some reason, he just wanted to keep believing, even after a third championship, a fourth championship, a fifth championship, that he was this underrated six-round draft pick that nobody cared for. But see, once he got from under that New England umbrella and he can actually talk, actually be himself, he's acting how he's supposed to act. He's acting like a dude with seven rings should be, like a dude that's married to Giselle should be, like a dude that gets to do whatever the hell that he wants should be. This is who Tom Brady should be like. This is what he is. Tom Brady should walk around with all his rings. I want to see him wear gold chains and walk around sipping on TB12 protein in the shaker. That's the type of dude Tom Brady has earned the right to be. And I'm glad he's not in New England. I'm glad he's not on to Cincinnati. And it's like, yeah, I'm going to talk my ish because I earned this.
In the meantime, Dan Graziano, you were making the point in our meeting this morning, as everybody was, everyone's dying to know who he was talking about when he said, you're going to stick with that guy instead of me. And everyone is playing that game.
Yeah, I'm going back to last March. And we're like, which teams seem like they're going to be interested? At the end, the only two teams that were serious were Tampa Bay and the Chargers. They both made offers, similar if not identical offers, and Brady picked Tampa Bay's. But, you know, look, San Francisco was poking around on it. That's his hometown team, and we know he has a history with the starting quarterback there in terms of at least being competitive with him. Tennessee was a team that was brought up. I think the Raiders were involved on some level. So, yeah, we can have all kinds of speculation we want about who he's talking about, but there's no doubt that RC's point is correct. Tom Brady is feeling himself in a way that I think any of us would want to be if we were in his position.
I mean, if we were in one-fifth of this position. Mike Tannenbaum, what do you think?
I agree with Dan to a certain extent that certainly the Chargers were interested, but I think he was certainly referring to Jimmy Garoppolo because it was well known that besides the Chargers and obviously the Buccaneers, the 49ers took a long look at things. And when you think about Tom Brady, he could have gone home to a really good team that had just been in the Super Bowl. If I'm him, I go there, I can win a championship, retire a 49er, a team I idolized. Garoppolo was drafted in the second round of New England. He's kind of been a thorn in Tom's side. So I think if I had a guess, to me, that's who he was referring to.
Okay, we will see. The beauty of it, maybe the single best part of it, is that I think RC, he cast that doubt in the minds of like half the quarterbacks in the NFL. I think that's
absolutely
right.
Absolutely. Hey, there's some dude sitting at his house, and when he saw that spotlight or that highlight from the show, he was like, was he talking about me? He asked his homeboy, hey, you need to Google to see if Tom Brady was ever going to come here because he might be talking about me.
I agree completely. I think that was calculated, too. He doesn't get anything wrong. All right. So, meantime, we have all this going on. And then the insanity of last night. that we had in Major League Baseball. Let me take you to that here, if we can. Guys, what do we have here? Yeah, there we go. We got the game last night between the Nationals and the Phillies. We got Max Scherzer making his first start since June 11th, and he didn't miss a beat in the first inning. He strikes out JT Realmuto. He would strike out the side. Then, before heading to the dugout, the umpires pat him down. He's being checked for foreign substances. You can see he doesn't like it. Didn't have much choice in the matter. Meanwhile, bottom of the third, now he's got Bryce Harper, strikes him out, and as he's heading to the dugout, they check him again. And you can see Scherzer is heating up a little bit. He's one whose motor tends to run hot anyway. Now, bottom of the fourth, after he strikes out Alec Bohm, Joe Girardi decides he's going to ask the umpires to check Scherzer again. Out they go to the mound, and now Scherzer is furious. Here we go. The hat is on the ground. The belt is unbuckled. You can see he's yelling, "I got nothing. I got nothing." And as the search continues, Davey Martinez from the mound is yelling at Joe Girardi, who's yelling back. The umpires are checking Scherzer's hair. Candidly, the whole thing is just ridiculous. After the search, Scherzer is like, "My hair is wet." Fifth inning now. Scherzer's still out there with a new hat. He strikes out Realmuto to win the inning. He's walking off. He is staring down Joe Girardi, and Joe Girardi is having none of it. He's out of the dugout. He's yelling at Max Scherzer. He wants a piece of Scherzer. Girardi gets ejected from the game, from the dugout. Scherzer's loving it. He's holding up his hat and his gloves. Scherzer and the Nationals win it by a score of 3-2. The entire thing was just something of an eyesore. Here was Joe Girardi after the game.
I've seen Max a long time, since 2010. Obviously, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. But I've never seen him wipe his head like he was doing tonight, ever. Going like this, right? So it was suspicious for me. He did it about four or five times. I didn't mean to offend anyone. I just got to do what's right for our club.
So that happened, and then this happened last night, too. A's pitcher Sergio Romo dealing with a substance check. Here we go. He doesn't like it. He's taken off the belt. He's lowering the pants. This whole thing has just become completely unseemly in the majors. By the way, Romo and the A's beat Texas 13-6. So that was that. Meanwhile, back to this coming up. It got physical last night for Devin Booker and the Suns, but Phoenix rose when it mattered most. Are we seeing the future of the NBA right now? That's next. Get up on ESPN.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
You got to get the job done. Let's put one together right here.
Crowder throws it up.
Give me the fire, give me the fire, light up the matches.
And Booker's going to go back to the locker room.
Devin Booker drills it. Paul George misses a pair, and the Suns with a chance to win it.
The eight. If he throws it, you got to, like, try to dunk it.
Crowder looking, throws it. Alley-oop. Oh! Ayton puts it down! He puts it down! Suns win game two.
Jay made a great pass. You know, I just finished. Enjoying the win tonight and getting ready for L.A.
That is one of the extraordinary finishes in any NBA playoff game ever. And so, PJ Carlissimo, for everybody just joining us here, let's walk through it. All the things that had to go right for Phoenix and all the things that had to go wrong for the Clippers for that to end the way it did.
Well, their execution was perfect, Greeny, and it starts with the Devin Booker screen, because you can't, you always say, let's just switch, but you're really worried that Booker is going to pop out and jump. Great screen right there by Booker. Had illegal, but he's got Zubats right there. Now the pass. Jay Crowder made a pass that was absolutely perfect. And the easy part really was DeAndre Ayton. All he had to do was jump up and stuff it through. And again, accent on, it's a pass. It's not a shot. So there's no such thing as goaltending on that play. He can jump up and get it. The fact that Booker was the screener made it really hard. Nick Batum couldn't switch out or he couldn't lean the other way because if Booker pops out, he's got an open jump shot and it's only a one-point game. 0.9 seconds, that's enough time to shoot it. But give Monty Williams a ton of credit for the people he put into play, the execution by Jay Crowder. Yeah, DeMarcus Cousins could have done a better job. He should have been leaning more inside. You have to take away that pass into the paint. There's no way you should allow a pass toward that black part of the floor. The pass has got to come in toward the corner or toward half court. But it's easy to second guess. DeMarcus got thrown in right at the last minute. I mean, that's a common occurrence. One of the assistant coaches probably, you know, yelled to Lou, hey, let's put a big on the ball. He turns, he puts Boogie in, and they probably didn't have enough time to go over with DeMarcus Cousins what he needed to do. You would hope he would know that's happened before. I'm sure he's guarded an inbounder before, and your number one rule is don't allow a pass into the paint.
Yes, and the one thing that they weren't lacking for at the end of that game was time to talk over how they wanted to do things with all the stoppages at play. But that's a different topic. So, PG, let me ask you this, because you coached a million games. We just heard what Monty Williams, the winning coach, said in the huddle. What is the coach on the defensive side saying there? What are you telling your players as they're going out to defend that in the final 0.9
seconds? Well, you're probably switching everything because you want to make sure you want to come together shoulder to shoulder if you're a defender. You have to let them know, hey, 0.9, guys, there's enough time to catch it and shoot it. It's not a 0.3 deal. It's 0.9 seconds. So you're switching. You're telling your inbounder, don't allow a pass into the lane. You see, poor Nick Batum didn't know what to do. He knew it was a good screen, and Ayton was probably open, but the last guy in the world that he wanted to leave is Devin Booker, so he's kind of caught between a rock and a hard place, and you love to go shoulder to shoulder and switch that. When it's a big small, it's the toughest thing to switch. That's why Monty had the big and the small involved in the screen, Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton.
And speaking of the big and the small, that is becoming a really good 1-2 punch for a Phoenix team that is now two wins away from the NBA Finals. And there's been so much attention paid to Booker, and rightfully so, for how well he has played. But I know that you are keeping a close eye on DeAndre Ayton. We may be seeing a star born there as well.
He's playing so much better than he did in the regular season, and it's versatility, Greeny, that makes him so hard. This guy's 6'11", 250. Look at him put the ball on the floor and beat you on the dribble right there. He's a big man. We know he can run the floor, and we know he can catch it and dunk it. But again, all big guys can't do that right there. Can he rebound? Yes, he can rebound. He averages over 10 a game. He averaged a double-double regular season and playoffs. Is he a shot blocker? Yes, he is. He averages over one a game. So he plays on both ends of the floor. And here's what he can do that a lot of people don't realize. He can shoot the ball. He shoots 63%. He's not going to be 23 years old until next month, Greeny. He was very good. He's taking it to another level right now. He's reaching his potential.
He was a one and done in Arizona, so it feels like he's been around a while, but he's still only 22 years old. And again, he's two wins away from the NBA Finals. PJ, we'll check back with you as we continue here. Thank you so much, my friend. And let me run the floor here. Here's more good news for the Suns organization. They are optimistic that Chris Paul could return for game 3, which is tomorrow night. He's missed the first two games of the series in the league's health and safety protocols, but again, there is an expectation that he will be back for game 3. Tonight, meanwhile, is game 1 in the East in Milwaukee between Trae Young and the Hawks and Giannis and the Bucks. Milwaukee, the only team remaining that has been unbeaten at home during the playoffs. So we'll see if they're able to continue that. And then continuing what was a very busy night in the NBA last night, it was the draft lottery. The Detroit Pistons got the first overall pick. The future Hall of Famer Ben Wallace was representing Detroit last night, and he was good luck. Cade Cunningham is projected to the Pistons with the first pick, and according to Woj, Cunningham will only meet with the Pistons and nobody else. And as for the rest of the top five, here's what it looks like according to our own Jonathan Givony. After Cade, you got Jalen Green going to Houston. He was the top college prospect before opting to play in the G League. Other notable players include last year's freshman phenom from Gonzaga, Jalen Suggs, slated to go to Toronto. Meanwhile, back to the NFL conversation we go. In the NFC East, well, they just were not good last year. The division had a collective winning percentage of 367, worst in NFC East history, fourth worst by any division in the Super Bowl era. Washington won it at 7-9, which was tied for the worst record by any division winner in the Super Bowl era. They lost by 8 in the wild card round to the eventual champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers. As far as who's going to win the division this year, Caesars William Hill has Dallas installed as the favorite with the assumption that Dak Prescott will be ready by week one. Washington has the second shortest odds. And so as we put our football crew together here, we ask for burning questions from the NFC East from each of you. And Mike T, I will start with you. What is the big thing you're looking to find out from the NFC East this year?
Philadelphia, what do they have in Jalen Hurts? In all probability, Greeny, Philadelphia's going to have three number one picks in next year's draft. We don't know what we have in Jalen Hurts yet. He only threw 77 passes a year ago. Is he a frontline starter? Is he a franchise player? Will they forget about Carson Wentz? This season, they need to know what they have in Jalen Hurts. It will literally set the trajectory of the Philadelphia Eagles for the next 10 years. And more importantly, what do they do in next year's first round?
That's exactly right, because they have all those first-round picks, and the quarterback carousel, maybe they wind up using some of those to acquire someone if they're not happy with what they see. Graziano, you covered the NFC East for us for years. What's your burning question?
Did the Cowboys do enough to fix that defense? You mentioned they're listed as the odds-on favorite. Dak Prescott coming back. The offense should be good. The defense was not just bad, it was atrocious last year, to the point where they used eight of their 11 draft picks on that side of the ball, brought in a couple of free agent safeties, changed defensive coordinators, bringing in former Falcons coach, former Seahawks defensive coordinator Dan Quinn. Really, if they can just get that defense to be middle of the pack, this should be a competitive team, given how good we expect their offense to be. But major questions on that side of the ball until we see major improvement.
Okay, fair enough. And then finally, RC, I'm coming to you. The division you know well. You played in Washington there. You played for the Giants. Mm-hmm. What is your burning question about the NFC East?
Was the Washington football team a Ryan Fitzpatrick away from being a contender? Was the team we watched play last year that lost to Tampa Bay in the first round, was that the Phoenix Suns in the bubble? And can Fitzmagic be their Chris Paul? That's what we really need to find out. We know this team is really good on defense, great up front defensively. You go out and you add some pieces to the outside in free agency. Can Fitzpatrick do some of the things he did last year in Miami and bring some of that magic to Washington, get them to the playoffs, and make them a contender?
I'm with you. And look, you've made the line. I'm using your line here on this show. You've said no one has ever said we are Ryan Fitzpatrick away from winning the Super Bowl. But we're going to say it this year.
Nobody's ever said it.
That's right.
No one's ever said it over a decade and a half.
But he has played better than most people realize the last few years. Washington is clearly the team to beat in that division. Who's the team to beat in the Euros? We're continuing to get the answers to those questions, and we'll find out today. The action on ESPN and ESPN2. We've got Slovakia-Spain on ESPN and first place Sweden against Poland on ESPN2. Our pre-match coverage starts 11:30 Eastern. Both matches also available on the ESPN app. One app, one tap. Meanwhile, coming up, two major stories this week that could change college football forever. What's happening? How soon will it impact your team? We'll answer those questions next.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code PARLAY and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code PARLAY. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
We are back on Get Up with your wake-up call. How about this finish last night?
There's 9/10 remaining. Crowder will inbound. Cousins waving his arms. Crowder looking, throws it. Alley-oop! Oh! Ayton puts it down! He puts it down! It's over! Suns win game 2.
What a call from Mike Breen. We'll have much more on that as we go. But there was big news here, too. An update now on the college football playoff potentially expanding to 12 teams. Yesterday, the CFP board authorized a summer review phase, which will determine the feasibility of an expanded field and how best to implement such an expansion. That is a lot of syllables in those words. And so let's get the explanation from the one who covers it more closely than anyone. Our Heather Dinich joins us here. Heather, you were there in Dallas for this yesterday. What do the fans need to know?
Well, they need to know that, first of all, everyone liked this. The 12, the 11 presidents and chancellors who were there, none of them had any serious concerns with it. That's very important. So the next step is for the commissioners to turn around and talk to the bowl executives, specifically the Rose, Orange, Sugar. There are a lot of contracts involved that are at the crux of this conversation, along with ESPN TV executives. And then they're going to report back on September 28th. They also want to talk to the student athletes. How do they feel about playing another game or two during a time when there are a lot of exams? So now's when the nitty-gritty gets done.
Okay, and so to be clear, it sounds to me, or at least the sense I'm getting from following this, as though it is moving in that direction. It is more a question of when than a matter of if. Is that an accurate way to look at it?
I think that's a fair statement. Now, everyone in that room is cautioning this might not happen before the end of the 12-year agreement. And that goes back to the contracts that I just talked about. I asked SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey yesterday if he thinks it could happen. And he said that I would temper my expectations. We have an opportunity here to do some more digging. Never say never, obviously, but they're split in the room. There are people who think it can be done. West Virginia President Gordon Gee walked out and said, hey, if we can figure this thing out, let's get it going. But there are others who aren't so sure that this can all be unwound. There were attorneys in the room yesterday because there are a lot of legal issues to work around here with those contracts.
Remind everybody, when does the current contract expire?
2025 through the 2025 season. So we're going into the 8th football season of the 12-year contract.
No, we're still a long way away from that, so it may be that far off that we expand to 12 teams. Heather, we'll bring you back for more on this a little bit later, and on this, because this to me was the really big story of the week. The Supreme Court unanimously deciding the NCAA cannot enforce rules limiting education-related benefits that colleges offer to student athletes. That ruling, which came down Monday, will help determine whether schools decide to offer athletes tens of thousands of dollars in those benefits, and it has been described by many who follow this closely as a potential first step towards a pay-for-play situation in collegiate sports. And so I wanted to bring Ryan Clark and PJ Carlissimo in on this as well, because both of you have connections to this. RC, you played, obviously, at LSU at the highest level, and you are the father of a player who is playing Division I college football right now. So as you saw this decision get made, RC, I wanted to hear your reaction.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it was shocking. I mean, you think about the last time the Supreme Court has weighed in on anything in NCAA was in the 80s. And so for them to come out and say, okay, listen, what you are doing is flatly wrong. If you listen to what Judge Kavanaugh said, he said in any other industry or almost any other industry in America, this would be flat out illegal. And I think that's what many people have been saying as colleges have learned and found ways to make more and more money. The NCAA has found ways to make more and more money off of these young men, off of these young student athletes, and not find ways to pay them or not find ways to make sure they have exactly and absolutely everything that they need. So I felt like this was warranted. I felt like this was a good decision. And now the NCAA is faced with a problem, right? It's faced with an opportunity to make a decision and say, you know what? We can do the right thing by these players so no one else has to weigh in, or we can try to continue to have this archaic model that allows us to benefit by only paying very little money. So I look forward to seeing what the decision is going forward, but I think this benefits the players and could benefit the NCAA if they handle things correctly.
Okay, yeah, it doesn't seem they've been inclined to go in that direction before, but maybe this will give them no other option. And PJ, I wanted to get your perspective. I feel like I need to make sure the audience knows you coached in college a really long time. You had Seton Hall in the national championship game once upon a time. So you know the ins and outs of this as well as anybody. What impact do you think it would have on college basketball, let's say, if this thing continues to go in the direction it feels like it is?
I don't think it's going to have the huge impact necessarily on college basketball. College basketball is what makes all the money for the schools. The football playoffs are a little bit different the way that operates. Heather could speak to that more. The NCAA sometimes gets a bad rap, Greeny, because the NCAA is the schools. The schools are the ones that get that money, and thousands upon thousands of athletes in all these other sports get the full scholarship. I coached for 23 years, and when we offered somebody a scholarship, it was worth north of $200,000. So nobody talks about that benefit anymore. You're getting a college degree, the chance to go for 4 or 5 years for free. NIL is going to address some of these inequities that Ryan's talking about, name, image, and likeness. They're going to start letting some of the players, particularly in football or in college basketball, find ways to give them more money. But the more you give and the more you expand that, there's not going to be enough money to go around. So it's a little bit more complicated than Judge Kavanaugh is making it sound.
RC, do you want to jump back in on that?
No, I totally understand what PJ is saying. And obviously, he was involved in college basketball a lot longer than I played football, or longer than Jordan's been in school. And I think those inequities that he mentioned will be addressed in the NIL, but those are going to be for certain players. I think they're looking for a way to have a more universal way of helping these kids, of giving these kids more, of allowing them to benefit more from being student athletes and being the ones who are making money for these schools. Listen, I know PJ say basketball is a huge thing, but I played in Tiger Stadium. I live in Baton Rouge. I know on Saturday night, I can see the lights from my house, and it's a ton of money being made out there. And I also know that some of these players that sometimes don't have things to eat and need home-cooked meals, and I'm also doing that as well. And so I think that as things move along, if the NCAA does decide to do the right thing, this doesn't have to get ugly.
And so, Heather, let me come back to you, because as you were there in Dallas with all of these significant decision-makers in college football who were there to talk about the previous issue, which is the expansion, I'm sure there was also a lot of conversation about the Supreme Court decision. What did you hear from them?
There was a lot. You're right. And I got to talk to Notre Dame Athletic Director Jack Swarbrick, who has the lawyer's mind, and I asked him what he thought about it. And he said that he's never seen amateurism as a defense. And he said basically that we had that language coming to us. He was talking about Kavanaugh's opinion. And he said, look, you don't not pay your babysitter. There's no incentive for that. So he was fully supportive of the way it came down. And, you know, I talked to Greg Sankey about it at length, and he said that they've got to find a national way to do it. But the problem is it's a state by state thing right now. It's tough for everyone to get their arms around, but they got to do it quickly.
So as we said about the previous issue as well, this is headed in a direction. It's just a question of how long it's going to take to get there, and it may be a very long time. Let me leave that for the moment, but we will have more on it as we continue. In the meantime, let me run the bases through a very busy and sticky night in the majors. More sticky situations. We showed you this earlier. Joe Girardi calling for Max Scherzer to be checked for substances, leading to all kinds of drama between the two. Girardi got thrown out. A's pitcher Sergio Romo literally dropped his pants to show the umpires he wasn't hiding anything. So this is where that has gone in baseball. Meanwhile, this is more bad news for fans of the Mets. Their pitching core taking a hit. Marcus Stroman exiting the game in the second inning last night with a sore left hip. And the Mets would lose 3-0 to the Braves. Stroman will undergo further testing. And then the Tampa Bay Rays, they bring up Wander Franco, considered to be the best prospect in the bigs, and he made his major league debut in style. He had a 3-run homer and added a double. The Rays would lose to the Red Sox 9-5 and 11 innings. They've been losing a lot of games, but that kid looks like he's going to be special. Meanwhile, tonight on ESPN and the app, we have another College World Series Major League Baseball doubleheader for you. It starts in Omaha, 7 Eastern. elimination game between Stanford and Vandy, then to Petco Park for the series finale between Mookie Betts and the Dodgers and Fernando Tatis Jr. and the Padres. All that action coming your way tonight on ESPN. As we continue next, back to the drama in the desert. Did the Suns deliver a knockout blow? Or down 2-0, are the Clippers right where they want to be? We'll answer that question next.